Please silence all electronic devices.
Members, the nurse of the day today is...
The job we have as legislators is to decide where the lines are.
It is a very sacred and holy institution.
I'll move to amend the bill. Even the old folks
in Devon knew. He said, hey, ain't you Jesse Harris? And I couldn't deny that. I said, yeah.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
While I do not believe I did anything illegal or ever thought I was doing anything illegal...
You're fired.
North Carolina General Assembly enacted.
Any further discussion or debate?
Welcome to the WUNC Politics Podcast, the first of the new fiscal year. And why is that noteworthy? Well, because in this episode, we are talking all about, or at least mostly about, the state budget that kicks in as early as, well, today, the beginning of the fiscal year. I'm Dave DeWitt, Managing Editor for News at WUNC, and I'm here with Jeff Tiberi, Capitol Bureau Chief.
Hey there.
Jorge Valencia, Capitol Bureau reporter.
Greetings.
And Jess Clark, Fletcher Fellow for Education Policy Reporting.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. And we are sort of splitting this up. We've got a couple of us here in Durham, a couple in the Capitol Bureau in Raleigh, because as we sit here, it is Friday, July 1, mid-morning, the last day of the budget debate. The Senate is poised to give final approval to the state budget. Then it goes on to the governor, and everyone supposedly heads home here in the next day or two. But let's step back a little. I want to ask each of you two questions as this session comes to a close. And here's the first question. What is the most significant development that comes out of this 2016 short session? And Jeff, let's start with you.
So as we're heading toward the end of this session, I guess the most significant development is HB 2, which, of course, wasn't part of the short session. It was a special session. And now, as we lived through a chaotic day at the legislature yesterday of rumors and innuendo and backdoor conversations and this is going to happen and here's the proposal and oh, they're going to roll back this part of it. No, there aren't enough Republicans to do this. The most significant development is HB 2, right? Because it set off national criticism and this frenzied television editors and folks everywhere who wanted to cover every twist and turn of this thing. But there's also this, right? I mean, that's what it's been. I mean, some of it's been news reporting. Some of it's just been sensational. And let's cover this till the very end.
I think a lot of people do want to know about it.
I think they do. For
this
sure.
This is one bill in which every quarter turn, a lot of people do want to know about.
Right.
Sorry to cut in.
No, you're fine. Cut me off anytime. I don't know if we need to know every. So that's the most significant development, HB 2, because it has huge ramifications, both North Carolina's reputation, the infighting that's going on here politically and with, you know, just with public discourse, what's going to happen down the line with elections and the NBA. But here we are. We don't have any kind of resolution to House Bill 2. It'll ultimately play out in the courts, as we've said here many times. So I don't know if I'm answering your question. I've dodged your questions here on the podcast.
Let me ask this real quick, just as a follow-up. What's really interesting to me is the last couple of days as the governor has had meetings with Democrats. You know, Democrats are completely ignored during the session. They have nothing interesting to say. Well, that's not true. They have a lot of interesting to say.
No one will listen.
But no one will listen, right. And now
what
you
Jorge
get...
what just said. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say, now the governor is courting Democrats. What does that mean?
So it means he needs them. It means he needs them to move this forward. So I had a couple of conversations with people on background this morning, people who have been involved in conversations about trying to work out a deal, not present lawmakers, people that are outside of this building who, based on the conversations I had with them, told me that they've had conversations with the commissioner's office and the NBA. And there have been a host of proposals over the last 45 days about what to do with HB 2. One that I thought was particularly interesting was to form a commission of advocates and everybody from the Billy Graham Foundation to Equality NC.
Is this the Art Popa Commission? Or is this a different one?
This is a different commission that at least has been talked about. The idea would be to put everybody in a room and talk about House Bill, look at House Bill 2, look at similar laws across the country, and make adjustments, make recommendations to the legislature. Obviously, that's not going to happen. Your question, Dave, the governor and Democrats, what does it signal? It signals that there are some Republicans who are not happy with House Bill 2 from an economic standpoint, who would like to see the damage stop, the faucet of negative water that's pouring on the state, bad analogy, go away. But there aren't enough Republicans in the Republican caucus here to move forward with that. So he's seeking Democratic support. But
And are Democrats interested in helping him?
Some, but not enough. Mm. I mean, there are some Democrats who could sell this to their districts as, conservative-leaning rural districts where Democrats do serve.
Do you know if these are Democrats in the Senate?
These are Democrats in the House. I have not talked to any Democrats in the Senate who have said they would support this. But at the same time, Senate Minority Leader Dan Blue seemed to be towing a line yesterday with discussions about this. I could see him getting behind
this. I mean, He seemed willing to listen. But the last I thought the position was, the prevailing position from the Democratic side was that the only thing they would support would be a full-on repeal of House Bill 2, which is not going to happen. If anything happens to it, that's definitely not going to happen.
Right,
There would be some tweaks to some provisions. Mm.
So I would be surprised, as we tape this on Friday morning, if we see anything of significance, real substance, pertaining to a rollback of HB 2 moving forward.
But anything could happen.
In this building.
Right, and it's important, again, to say this is Friday mid-morning. There are a lot of moving parts going on. So as you're listening to this, loyal podcast listener, things could be different. So
check our Twitter.
That's right. Going back to sort of the big issue or big issues that came out of this session, I want to turn to you, Jess. What do you think was not necessarily the biggest, but a big issue that came out of this session?
Oh, man. There's so many big issues in education. I mean, teacher raises obviously are going to suck up the most air in the room. But honestly, I think the voucher thing is just, I mean, that's a lot of money. So Republicans, this initiative came from the Senate in the budget, put $34 million in a reserve fund. And so basically that's meant to forward fund vouchers in the future. And for listeners that may not know exactly what a voucher is an amount of money that the state pays to a family to send their kid to private rather than public school. And they're really controversial because a lot of people don't want public dollars going to private schools, most of whom are religious. I think 93% of voucher dollars go to religious schools.
And a different level of accountability.
Right. And that is the big thing, is that, you know, we hold our public schools to a very high level of accountability. We've got the A through F grading system. We've got all sorts of initiatives that come out of the legislature, data, holding them accountable, all sorts of testing. And the private schools mostly are not held to anywhere near that same standard. And so there's a lot of pushback against giving them public dollars and expanding it in this way. And so this year, $34 million goes to them, but that's in the budget. It's set to grow by $10 million every year until 2028, where you have $145 million. So that's enough to give, I think, about 34,000 students private school vouchers.
And the amount is around $5,000.
Yeah, right? It's $4,200.
Right.
So that is enough to cover the cost of tuition for private schools in very rural parts of the state. But it's not enough to cover tuition at, say, Ravenscroft or some of the more expensive elite, quote unquote, private schools that are in the Triangle.
And to qualify for these vouchers, we're talking about low income, middle income, low to middle income
students. Yeah, low to middle income students. I think for a family of four, that family would earn around $60,000 in order to be eligible. So there is a lot of pushback. I mean, it was probably the most contentious thing during the budget debate. Democrats were really pushing back against this, and I don't think it would have been as big an issue for Democrats, but there are a lot of initiatives that did not get the funding that they expected to. For example, 14 early college high schools were essentially stripped of state funds in order to provide those extra services. So now, in the northeast part of the state, you've got five schools, and the early college high schools are basically students that go in can get an associate's degree and get their diploma. So they're really important for low-income students because obviously that knocks off 2 years of what you're paying for a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm. And some of those schools are STEM focused, and that a lot of Republicans have supported those in the past.
So these are going unfunded. That means those local districts, mostly in the Northeast, are going to have to, they're going to have to cover the cost of those college textbooks and transportation for the kids between high school and community colleges with local dollars. And, they're kind of their taxes are maxed out locally in a lot of those districts. They're not going to be able to ramp up more funding for that. So.
Right. And the voucher debate's not going anywhere soon. As it ramps up every year. And what was interesting to me about that is when they introduced the voucher program a couple years ago, they said, it's going to be small. We're going to start it small. Mm-hmm. But obviously it was a foot in the door, and everybody kind of knew it was going to get larger and larger and larger.
Yeah.
And it has.
And it has, and it will.
And it'll continue to get people upset. So that's an interesting topic for sure, and it's quite big. Jorge, what do you have? What's your most significant or one very large important issue that came out of this session?
You know me. I don't want to pick one, but you're forcing me to pick one. So I'm gonna throw a very, this is not a very sexy one, but here it is. Locking in income taxes at 5.5%.
Oh, I think
in
that's
the state
sexy.
Constitution.
Thank
you. Well, okay. I don't want to ask why you think that, Jessica. Go ahead. Go ahead, Jorge. Why is that significant?
Because, all right, so just a really quick to recap, this is pretty soon, this is going to be the tax rate at which everybody here in the state is going to get taxed on their income taxes. This is something that the Republicans, mostly in the Senate, have been working on since 2011. And we're going to get there pretty quickly. And what they are trying to do right now is to get voters to say, hey, this is never going to go any higher than that, and we're going to lock it in the Constitution. We're going to engrave it in stone. So that's where we are right now. Why is it so significant? Because if you look at it from the Republicans' perspective, this is part of this long-term strategy that they've had to sort of stimulate economic growth, to stimulate money flowing in the economy, to put more money in people's pockets, allow them to do whatever it is that they want to do. So in the long term, this could have really great benefits for the state's economy. So that's one way of looking at it. On the other hand, if you step back and you take a little bit more of the liberal perspective, you look that there are other states that have done this. I think Colorado is one of them. And it has not worked out so well for them. And there are some of the more left-leaning organizations, like, for example, the Budget and Tax Center, that say that the reason why the state has had economic growth is because the country has had strong economic growth in recent years, and that the state is simply, not using as much money as it could to benefit some of the perhaps education that Jess was talking about, or some of the more social programs that we have. So that, I think, that's going to be very, very significant for economic purposes, and that is the true direct effect on people who are listening to this, everybody in North Carolina. Now, separately, I just want to make a separate side note. I think it's also significant because this is part of three questions that are probably, has not passed yet.
Probably not. What I've heard, the latest, and listen, I could be dead wrong on this. It sounds like this might get parked and stay put, that these constitutional amendments might not make it to the ballot in November.
Okay.
That's the latest from what I've heard, but
all
go
right.
ahead.
Okay, major caveat. if this passed, because again, this is very fluid right now. Anything could happen in the next 12 hours. But if this does pass and it does get put to a referendum, it is part of a package of two other questions to voters, which one of them ultimately would make it more difficult for the state to take over property through eminent domain, right? And then the other one would, in a sense, put in the Constitution saying that people, North Carolinians, have a constitutional right to hunt
and trap and fish, I believe,
yes.
Is all three, yeah.
So this amounts to a conservative turnout constitutional amendment measure on the ballot, and that could have an impact on the people who come out,
right.
It could be perhaps an insurance policy for some conservative voters who perhaps may not be interested in supporting the candidate who is at the top of the bill, who's at the top of the ticket,
Trump,
but they may want to come out because they want to make sure that the taxes never go up higher, or want to make sure that it's in the Constitution say that they can hunt.
Jeff,
so,
why would these things not get through the legislature and get on the referendum ballot?
That's a loaded question. It's
There are all kinds of bargaining.
It already passed in the Senate. So the House would have to approve this presumably in the next 24 hours or the next 30-ish hours if they're going to adjourn for the year. It's a matter of, I mean, the Senate wants this more than the House from what I've gathered through reporting. So if the House is going to do that, if you want me to take you out for tacos, what do I get in return? I want a beer in return. I want a glass of wine in return. Whatever it is. You know, it's a tit-for-tat kind of deal here.
Margarita.
And at this point, I'd like a margarita, and I'd like salt, please. So at this point, what is the Senate going to do for the House if they're going to move, it's actually HB 3, this constitutional amendment thing, forward? So that's part of the reason why it might not go anywhere. It also, might not be of real true importance to the Senate. I mean, they've moved a lot of things through that they wanted to do this session, both in terms of policy in the budget and budget items, and also policy outside of the budget. And it's possible that they're just putting this in front of the House as a bargaining chip, something that the House has to deal with or circumvent or at least acknowledge as it pushes through some of its own its own bits of its agenda.
Mm. Well, we got to almost 15 minutes before we started in with the wine and tacos, so that was good.
My favorite combination.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, those are big issues, and we'll be talking about those in the weeks to come, those of them that make it through the next, 24 hours or so. Let's go to some smaller things that are either buried in the budget. This happens every year. They're either buried in the budget or they're small. They seemingly small amendments or, the different kinds of conference reports, everything that sort of gets through, and sometimes they're really tiny and they become bigger things, or they're tiny to most of us. It doesn't affect us, but to a small group of people, it's really, really vitally important. And I'm going to start off with the Wright School. The Wright School is a school in Durham. It's a residential school for children with behavioral and mental issues. They come from all over the state. It's a small group of kids, usually about 2-3 dozen, who come here after they've essentially maxed out the services of the communities in which they live. And it's a hugely important thing to the people and the families of the kids who come here. It's fully state funded. It's a very unique school. There aren't many like these across the country. And every year the Senate tries to cut it and the House tries to save it. And every year so far, the House has saved it. It's one of those things that's really vitally important to a small group of people, but they really literally could not live without it. But it's always interesting to me that it becomes this sort of budget chip. It goes into the mix with everything else. And obviously, these are all negotiations. But that's my small little one that's a sort of bigger thing. Let's go back around. We'll start, just go the same way. Jeff, what's a small thing that you noticed that may become a big thing?
I think probably a stretch to say it's going to become a big thing. There were $250,000 in the budget that were earmarked for refrigerators in convenience stores in food deserts across the state.
Mm. Let's hear more about this. I don't know about that.
These convenience stores will be able to apply for $6,000 grants, and have refrigerators in convenience stores that provide fresh produce to people who might not readily have access to fresh produce. I think it's a big deal because diabetes is a huge issue and obesity is a huge issue, and food deserts are real in this state, and it's a problem.
And inside ballpark, it's a big deal because there have been some members who've been trying to get this through for years.
Yeah.
Like, they've been working on it for like 3 years, and they just can't get the political capital behind it.
From a health and wellness standpoint, I think it's great. My wife, who's a PA, will give me credit for bringing this up. But
and that's not why you did it. That's not why you did it.
No, that's not. I mean, truthfully, I spent a lot of time on I-40, and I enjoy having an orange or a banana option in addition to my salt and vinegar potato chips when I stop for gas.
Making your wife happy means extra wine and tacos for you.
But do you all remember the debate about this particular initiative in the beginning of the session?
So there was there was a heated one this year, and there was a great one last year too that resulted in a Republican lawmaker yelling about honey buns and Coke.
Yeah, I mean it's not a lot of money relatively to the budget, but I think Speciale, or however you say his name.
Speciale.
He really is against this.
Honey buns and Coke sounds like a country western group.
Only allocates for 41 refrigerators, which isn't very many across the state this huge, but it's a start, and it could be a jumping off point.
Yeah, to those people who it affects, it would be a big deal. So, all right, that's a good one. Jess, what do you got?
Well, mine isn't as small as $250,000, but so I think the most interesting thing in the budget are these incentive initiatives for teachers. I guess they have a pretty big price tag attached to them. But I think the one that's we've got the bonuses, the $50 bonuses for teachers whose students pass their AP tests. I think that's pretty interesting. And then also I think just kind of broadening that out, that you see three different initiatives in the budget that basically kind of move towards this pay for performance for teachers in schools.
Another one of those perpetual issues. We hear that in all those education committees all year, every year.
Yeah, and I mean, Republicans have really been pushing for this since they took over. And I think it's really starting to get some momentum now. And you've got... There are already districts that are doing this. So Winston-Salem has a pretty successful... version of a differentiated pay model. Charlotte has a version. Greensboro did have a version that was successful but very expensive. I think last year it lost the funding that it needed. But I think that you're seeing a really big push for that. There's a pilot program in there that's going to allocate I think like $1 million to a couple districts that are gonna try to differentiate teacher pay. And what's interesting about that is that it sounds like it makes sense, right? We're going to pay teachers who do the best job at educating students. But the reason it gets pushback is, one, because it's really hard to measure how well a teacher is doing because kids are different. They come from different backgrounds. There's all sorts of controversy around how we measure that and who's going to get these raises. And secondly, I think just culturally that the teaching profession is different than other professions. There's this kind of all hang together. We all get paid the same. We're all in this together type of mentality that you don't necessarily see in other professions. And I think part of that is that teaching is such, it's individual and yet collaborative at the same time. Everyone feels invested. And so it's really hard to, teachers don't like to feel like they're being pit against each other for money. So I think that also comes into play. So it gets a lot of pushback, but I think it's got some momentum, and I think we're definitely going to see some change in coming years in how teachers are paid in the state.
Very interesting. Jorge, what do you have?
All right, I'm going to sneak in one that is so small. I mean, this hasn't even gone anywhere, might not even go anywhere, but it says a lot about the way the building works, and that's why I'm going to put it in here. And this was something that actually happened Friday morning, and it was a measure that had to do with occupancy taxes, particularly in Jacksonville. And the senator from Jacksonville wanted to sort of allow the city to revert the way that they're using those taxes. Now, the House Finance Committee didn't allow it. Okay, so it may not be going anywhere for now. But this is why I think it's a big deal, because of the way that it happened. Now, so the senator from Jacksonville happens to be Senate Appropriations Chair Harry Brown. So being the Appropriations Chair, you're a pretty big deal because you have a lot of say in how the spending for the state is going to happen. And as you know, they spent a lot of time talking about that. And he's been trying to get the General Assembly, particularly the House, to move on this for years now. And what is it that he wants to do? He basically wants to allow Jacksonville to use more of that money from occupancy taxes from hotels to use it towards this project to build a sports complex so that they can attract more tournaments, more soccer tournaments. Apparently there's a big soccer community out there. But the thing is that there's a rule in the House that puts a limit to that, so that most of the money from occupancy taxes will be used directly for something that benefits the tourism industry, which is basically advertising and marketing for that community. So the House has this rule on it. There was a bunch of drama around this, and it was all usually the disagreement that we have is Republicans arguing with Democrats, but this is just all completely inside of the Republican caucus, and it was out in public. The very big players in the House were supportive of this. The rules chair in the House, the majority leader in the House were supportive of this. there was this agreement, and then there was this representative from Davie County. Her name is Julia Howard, and she is often the voice of dissent in the Republican caucus. And she very publicly called out her colleagues, saying the only reason why we're considering breaking this rule that we have, that has been a very big deal for us in the past, and that everybody before this has had to follow this rule, the only reason we're breaking it is because you have before you the appropriations chair of the Senate telling you that he wants this to happen. So this is all basically for political reasons. And then in response, Representative Skip Stam, who is, I'm sorry, I'm throwing so many names at you, who is also a key player in the House. He's on his way out, so he is perhaps a little bit more loquacious than other members of the chamber might be. He chimed in and he said, listen, I'm going to support this, even though it breaks the rules, mostly because if we don't allow Jacksonville to do it this way, next year the entire state is going to be paying for it. And the entire room broke out into laughter. The suggestion being that, well, the Senate Appropriations Chair is supportive of this, so you might find money somewhere else.
Is that really funny? Or is that kind of, like, why is that funny?
Well, I think the reason why this is funny is because this is the type of thing that maybe everybody knows, but doesn't really get said in public.
Fair enough.
You gotta but love here, Skip Stam.
here we are. You know, Skip Stam is a guy that I think that people, whether they agree with the type of bills that he support or they disagree with them, I think that most people agree that this is a guy who follows his principles.
He's got weight.
And who is talkative, and in addition to the fact that he's on his way out, we're also in the 11th hour. And I think a lot of people are kind of letting loose and they're being a little bit more open than they usually are because just everybody is tired. Everybody's worn out.
Yeah,
they're being more open.
And I haven't had breakfast. We're at the 11th hour on a Friday.
Yep.
I mean,
tacos and wine. Here we go.
anyway,
what's interesting to me is about you mentioned this, Jorge, the people who are on their way out, and there's a certain power and a certain entertainment value in watching these longtime legislators who are on their way out, and the things that they're pushing and the things that they're saying, they're a little more free and open with sort of what their opinions are, and that's somewhat refreshing. And I think on some level you wish that was kind of the case for everyone all the time.
Yeah, you wish that was the norm.
Yeah. So all right, well, we're going to wrap it up there. Next week I want to talk about sort of the big winners and losers in the budget, but that will take at least a week before we see who that is. But I do appreciate your coming on and your hard work, Jeff, Jorge, Jess. Thanks for all your hard work this week and throughout the session, and thanks for being on today.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Dave.
Make sure to subscribe to the WUNC Politics podcast on iTunes and Google Play, as well as Stitcher. And follow all of the WNC Politics stories on air and online. From Jeff Tiberi, Jorge Valencia, and Jess Clark, see you next week.